Betting on sports can be hard, but hiring Morgan & Morgan is easy. Morgan & Morgan is America's largest injury law firm. They have over 100 offices nationwide and more than 1,000 lawyers. Their fee is free unless they win. For more information, go to forthepeople.com/bestbets or dial pound law. That's pound 529 from your cell phone. That's forthepeople.com/bestbets. This is a paid advertisement.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is the Lombardi Line here on a Wednesday. Dave Ross here at Circus Sports, fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. Our GM, Michael Lombardi, back home on the East Coast. And Michael, it's been a wild 24 hours on the East Coast there, and certainly for the Jets fans. And maybe they're happy today. Yeah. I don't know if they're happy, but their GM is gone. Joe Douglas has been removed from his role there by the owner, Woody Johnson, after more than five seasons at the helm. We talked about it all summer, right? It was 9.5 was the win total for this team, which was the same win total they had the previous year. That was a dead under, as we saw with Aaron Rodgers' injury. This year they've had Aaron Rodgers, and yet Robert Saleh has been shown the door, and now the GM is gone. I wonder, Michael, is this because of expectation level that has not been reached that Woody Johnson has said, all right, the coach has got to go, and now the GM has to go?
Well, whenever the owner gets embarrassed, right, you know, he makes a change, he fires Saleh, and the team goes down the tubes. He trades for Davante Adams. It doesn't really help the team. So it's going to be somebody else's fault. One thing we know for sure, it's never the owner's fault. He's never accountable for anything. And I think, to me, Joe Douglas has been neutered for a while now. I think it's one of the hard things. I think since Woody Johnson came back after the Trump administration and he served over in Ireland, now he's back, he starts meddling. He's a meddling owner. Mm. He's not, I'm going to just pay checks and go watch the game. He thinks he knows football. He thinks overthinking is overrated. You know, he thinks thinking is overrated. So, poor Jet fans. I mean, you're stuck in this misery, right? They went all in on Aaron Rodgers. And I think everybody knew it. I mean, from Saleh to Douglas, when you went all in on Aaron and you weren't right on Aaron, right? Let's be clear here. They're not everybody thought Aaron could rejuvenate his career.
Sure.
Everybody thought Aaron could get back to the 21 Aaron, not the 22 Aaron, correct?
Yes.
And what we've seen out of Aaron is nothing but the 21 Aaron. We've not seen the 22 Aaron. We've never seen the 21. And Father Time is undefeated. I think this really is about anomalies, right? Everybody sees that Brady was able to play really well into his 40s. Well, the cutoff point for most quarterbacks since I've been in the league is 36, 37. Now, maybe it'll stretch higher because of time, but I think we see it with certain guys. I mean, Matthew Stafford can look great one week and maybe not so much the next week, right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't see the same consistency of performance that we're used to. And I think the Brady element of this has really affected teams because they truly believe Brady, this guy can come back again. He's coming off a major Achilles injury. Well, you say, well, you know, Kirk Cousins came back and he looks pretty good. Yeah, but is he really good enough? I mean, has he beaten anybody good? I mean, Atlanta's, you know, they have six wins, but two of those wins could have gone. I mean, Atlanta and the Bears might be the same team. Only the Atlanta's gotten an advantage of winning two games and the Bears lost two games, right? They be the same team.
Well, I think your analogy.
So I think to me,
yeah,
I think it's a little bit of that, Dave. I think that they went all in. And when you go all in, somebody's paying a price and it ain't the owner.
I think you nailed it on the head with the Brady analogy. I think the Jets said, well, Brady went year one to Tampa Bay and won a Super Bowl. Aaron will do the same thing, right? Then Stafford did it, right? Year one to L.A. from Detroit. Stafford did it. Brady did it. So Rodgers, because he's so great, he'll do it. And it hasn't worked out that way. And I guess, Michael, the question will be for next year, whoever the GM is and whoever the head coach is, what about Rodgers? Is that a Woody Johnson decision? Or is that going to be because Aaron says he wants to come back, Michael? How does that work out in New York next year with Rodgers and the Jets potentially?
Well, as we have a show on this network called Follow the Money, that's all you have to do is follow the money. He's owed money. Unless he's got to come back. I mean, this is a decision. Whereas the Giants are saying to us, look, we're not going to risk Daniel Jones getting hurt. So he's our third string quarterback. And if anybody gets hurt here, we're going to make sure that he doesn't play, you know, and so we're not going to be on the hook for $25 million. And I think that's where the Jets can't get away from this. They can't get away from this contract, so they know he's coming back. Now, it's going to be a high draft pick. They're going to have to draft somebody. They're going to have to prepare for the next thing. I think that's what you have to do. You got to prepare. Who's going to be the coach? But look, here's the reality of everything that we're dealing with right now is that Woody's making all these decisions. And for Jet fans, you have to trust Woody knows what he's doing. He's going to call the league office. That's how you got Mike McKagan. He called the league office. They said, talk to Charlie Cashley. Charlie Cashley told him to hire one of his best friends, Mike McKagan. Mike McKagan was no more qualified to be a GM in the league. He'd been a college scout his whole career, right? And so, you know, that's what happens. When you start getting into the league and then the league says, you know, it's the same thing that happened in Chicago, right? They go to the league office. Well, Bill Polian and Tony Dungy are going to help you pick the coach. Okay, well, they wanted Eberflus to be the coach. They loved Eberflus. So it was a close thing. And so to me, who's the best guy out there? I mean, if you're not trying to get – I mean, Woody's got to know he's not getting Belichick. But no. If you're not trying to get Mike Vrabel, who are you trying to get?
That's going to be the question, because whoever you get, you would hope would be symbiotic with Aaron Rodgers, because it sounds like, to your point, Michael, follow the money. He's going to be there next year under contract unless he decides to retire, and that does not seem to be – and hopefully we don't go through another offseason of is Aaron Rodgers retiring or not. He's under contract.
Oh, come on. You know we're going to play that drama, Dave. Come on. We're going to play that. It just goes – it's human nature. We're going to do that. But I think, to me, the biggest issue here is, does the GM come in have authority?
Right.
Or does he have to run everything by Woody? You know, and we, if you read all the articles that have come out, they all have said everybody in the Jets front office is involved, not the football people, the vice president, this guy, that guy. I mean, whenever, look, I've said this many times, they've never dedicated a monument to a committee. And when you have this many people that don't know anything about football, you're going to have a lot of bad decisions.
Yeah. And it looks like you're getting that right now. So, again, I'll be curious if anybody comes back in that coaching staff. Feels like it is a complete teardown with the head coach long gone and now the GM, Joe Douglas, is gone after five seasons. Michael, the Niners and the Packers this weekend in Lambeau Field. It is our game of the week.
This is the Lombardi Line Game of the Week, presented by Lowe's. Here's Michael Lombardi.
Michael, it's fascinating. Packers open 1.5, up to 2.5. But really, when you look at the coaching battle here, and I think we all, I know I do, reflexively go, well, who's got the edge? It's got to be, if you got the last name Shanahan, it's going to be hard to be better than Kyle Shanahan. But I do look at Matt LaFleur and feel like he did a really good job at the beginning of the year when they lose Jordan Love, and somehow he wins games with Malik Willis. Can we make a case that LaFleur is at least on par? And they come from the same tree here, the Shanahan and LaFleur. They were both in D.C. back in the day. What do you make of that coaching matchup between Shanahan and LaFleur this weekend?
Well, I think they both know each other, obviously. I mean, it's not going to be a secret scheme-wise. Both coaches know how the offense runs. Both coaches know what they like to do. They've worked together, so they're very familiar with it. It's going to come down to execution. It's going to come down to player performance. And for the 49ers, it's going to come down to, are they healthy? Right, they need Nick Bosa in this game badly, because this Packer team can pass protect, and they've got really good receivers. The problem with their team has been they lead the league in drop passes. So it really affects their continuity, affects their consistency, and affects their execution. And especially when they get to the red zone, where they have not been a very good red zone team. So to me, I think both coaches knowing each other are going to be the key to the game. Kyle coaches defense. He coaches the kicking game. Kyle coaches all three. Matt LaFleur doesn't even go anywhere near defense. He doesn't go anywhere near the kicking game. He's got Rich Bisacci to handle that, and he's got Jeff Hafley and now Robert Saleh to help him with the defense. So, you know, Saleh being on that staff is interesting, because Saleh is going to, hey, look, we played the Niners early in the year. This is what we didn't do. This is how they handled us. I think it gives some light to that, and it'll certainly help him.
It's interesting what you mentioned about knowing each other as well as they do. If you go back to the playoffs last year, I mean, it feels like the forgotten game. Packers, you could have made a strong case, should have won that game after they beat the Cowboys, yes. Right? I felt like they were arguably the better team on that field. Is it because of that familiarity that LaFleur does know Shanahan and vice versa? Is that why these games are a little bit closer to the vest? And I remember being on the Packers that day with the points. Never really was in jeopardy. And again, I kind of lean towards taking the points here in the 2.5 because I feel like these are coin flip games between these teams.
Yeah, I think to me, when you look at this game, I mean, the skill level for San for Green Bay outweighs the coverage level for San Francisco. And because San Francisco can't get any rush, right, I think it's really challenging. I think it's going to be really challenging for them. You know, and I think to me, that's going to be the game. And this game is going to be in the 20s. I think it's definitely going to be a higher scoring affair. You know, I think to me, the over at 47.5 certainly could be in play here because I think both teams will move the football. I think both teams will play well. Weather doesn't seem to be a factor at all. You know, I think to me, when you look at it, they lost by 3 points out there in San Francisco when San Francisco was a much better team than they are right now. They were able to run the football. But the difference in that game last year, when you go back and watch, it was Aaron Jones.
Yeah.
Right? It was Aaron Jones. They ran for 130 yards. Now, they turned the ball over, which, look, let's be clear about Jordan Love. Some of those throws he made against the Bears should have been intercepted, especially the one deep down the field to Watson. He made a great catch. He was double covered. He had the over route wide open. He doesn't throw it. He threw into double coverage. He got away with it, I think, there.
When you see Jeff Hafley year one as the defense coordinator there taking over for Joe Barry last year, and I know everybody said Joe was the problem, had to go. Defense has been better. What are you seeing out of that unit when we get inside these coaching staffs here? Why has their defense played better with Hafley calling the plays?
Well, I think to me, they've got more versatility within their scheme. I mean, last year, they were 10 for 16 against the 49ers on third down. They couldn't stop the 49ers on third down in the game. You know, and that was a real problem. Right? They converted 10 third downs in the game. They only had 19 first downs in the game when you think about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And most of them came on third down. You can't win any football games like that. So I think to me, Hafley's ability to create turnovers has been the big difference in their team.
That is our Lowe's game of the week. Packers and Niners now staying at 2.5 after opening 1.5. It has not moved off that 2.5 here for the rest of the week. When we come back, let's stay on the coordinator battles here in the NFL and how it might affect some of these games. That is next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Week number 12 in the NFL begins tomorrow night. Steelers and Browns. Dave Ross, Michael Lombardi here with you. Going to look at some of those coordinator battles, and we'll start with that game. But Michael, very quickly, I was thinking of this in the drive-in, as you know, you and I talk about it all the time. You blink, it's week 12. It begins tomorrow night. Has the NFL conditioned us as viewers? I railed against Thursday Night Football. The product might not be that good. We get all of that. Could America really do without Thursday Night Football anymore? They did it to us years ago with Monday Night Football. I don't think we can get through the week anymore, can we? Like, we have to have our Thursday Night Football.
I don't see how we could do it, David. I mean, I'm so programmed on Thursday. Like, to me, the amazing weekend starts on Thursday.
Right.
You know? Like, I'm just so used to it. Like, I know Tuesday and Wednesday I can catch up on Yellowstone or whatever show I want to watch that I haven't seen. You know, Friday's going to be some college football game or something. And, you know, so I got 2 days to catch up if, you know, and so that's it. And I love it. I mean, and I don't care what anyone says, you know, about the quality of the game and all that. It's still the game, right? We still have to handicap the game. And the curiosity that you go into the handicap is, was I right? Was I right on this game? That's what drives you, right? You want to be right on the game. You want to see the teams to make sure that, you know, what you're handicapping and what you know, obviously some people are talking about how they handle the, you know, the from 1 week to the next week. I think that's really important. And I think one thing we learned in this business is don't let the wins entice you to bet the next week.
At 1,000%. Again, I'm fascinated by this Thursday night matchup because when I look at it, I go, it just feels trappy for the Steelers. And then I think about the Steelers and I think about Mike Tomlin and talking about Thursday night football. I'm sure he loves the challenge of this spot, right? Going on the road, divisional rival. Arthur Smith, first year offensive coordinator there for Pittsburgh against Jim Schwartz, the DC for the Browns. We know how intense Jim can be as well. Who wins this matchup in your mind? And what do you think Arthur's doing now once they change quarterbacks from Russell, from Justin Fields to Russell Wilson that he couldn't do maybe at the beginning of the year?
Well, I think what he's doing is he's got more plays in the passing game. Plus, Russell's throwing the deep ball much better. You know, and other than that horrible interception last week, he's cutting down on Russell's mistake. Look, one thing about Jim Schwartz's defense, it's not complicated, right? You're not going to get, you know, he's going to have a couple blitzes. He's going to try. But I think where Jim's running out of patience and running out of really the ability to dominate the game is his injuries have piled up on his defense. He's not the same defense that he once was. And, you know, last year they couldn't play defense well on the road. This year they can't play defense well at home or on the road. You know, typically you can't – typically when you play a Jim Schwartz defense, it's hard to run the football on. It's really hard. You have a hard time trying to run the ball. It becomes very complicated. You know, they're very good at stacking the line of scrimmage. They're very good at taking away one of the things you want to do. This year they're 27th in the league in yards per attempt. I mean, they can't stop the run. And here's the thing. They can't run the ball. Mm. I mean, again, those two things go hand in hand. When you can't run the ball, you can't stop the run. You know, and I think that's the problem. And their defense this year, the numbers, they don't turn the ball over. They're 30th in the league in turnover takeaways, right? They're 24th in points allowed. And the other thing is they can't make a play on the ball with their secondary. They're just not good enough. And I think when you look at their team, I mean, they gave up 473 yards last week down in New Orleans to New Orleans. Wow. 214 on the ground, Dave.
Oof.
You know, and so like that to me is the big issue. They gave up 434 to the Commanders. They've had games where they've given up over 200 yards rushing. That's typically not what Jim Schwartz wants to do. He wants to stop the run, get you into third and long, and then use those wide nines to get up the field and make plays. But they can't stop the passing game either. They're 24th in yards per attempt. They're not a good defense this year. One of the things that I've learned is I've been counting on them being a good defense, and they're not. They've blown cover. Against the Chargers, they had free access touchdowns. They just had three touchdowns where they just blew the coverage.
Mm-hmm. It's rather fascinating, too. You look at the Steelers at 8-2. They're also 8-2 ATS. And then you look at the Browns. They're 3-7 ATS, 2-8 overall. There does feel like a correlation there. So I just say, as much as maybe the lean looks towards the Browns side here, beware. Pittsburgh's been really good, not just wins, but also ATS here, 8-2.
Well, I think the question is, how are they going to score? How do the Browns score?
Right.
They're the worst third down team in football. They're the 23rd worst team in red zone, you know, and then you're counting on them not to make a mistake. I mean, last week they had 443 yards in the game. Of course, you know, then they didn't turn it over. When they played the Chargers, they had three turnovers.
Mm. That's our Thursday night game to kick off week number 12. We saw a flip of favorites here. Seattle's now a 1-point favorite. You can find some pick-ems out there. Remember, the Cardinals were 1-point favorites. Drew Petzig's done a pretty darn good job as their offensive coordinator in Arizona. Mike McDonald, I thought he coached a really good defensive game last week against Kyle Shanahan and the Niners. How do you see this OC versus DC, well, head coach in this case, from Mike McDonald?
I think it favors Drew Petzig because he's seen what he did. You know, what McDonald did last week was change his approach to more what we call spin the wheel defense, not get locked into one front or one coverage. He kind of changed everything. Every down was a new call, trying to get the 49ers off balance. Petzig sees this, and I'm not sure that they could stop the run of Arizona. Arizona's a good run team. Now, look, we know weather's could be a factor, rainy, cold up in Seattle, which I think certainly favors Seattle here. But the matchup, I think Petzig will run the football on him. I think Petzig does a really good job, and I just don't think there's enough talent on this defense for them to really hold up in Seattle.
I'm fascinated by this Eagle and Rams game, Sunday night football in L.A. And, of course, you've got the old against the young, right? Vic Fangio has been around the block, seen it, done it. Sean McVay isn't exactly a spring chicken anymore, right? I think we just look at him and think, oh, he's still this young guy. Sean's won a Super Bowl. He's been around, too. What do you make of this matchup here for matching of minds and two pretty darn good ones?
Well, I think, look, one thing, that this will be a good chess match. It'll be the adjustments, but they know each other really well, obviously. You know, with Vic being in Denver, Vic being in Chicago, I think, you know, Sean knows what he wants to do. Sean's got his line back. And as long as Sean has, Puka Nacua in there, where he does such a good job with him in terms of how he handles him, like he slipped him through the C-gap last week to run a crossing route, which was really good, and the Patriots had no idea where he went. You know, he just does little things that make it very challenging on you. I really believe that, you know, Sean's going to be able to move the football. I think the bigger question is, can the Rams hold up? I mean, I never felt like the Rams were slowing down the Patriots. I never felt like they were going to get a three and out. I thought the Patriots were moving the ball too easily on them for me to have any faith that they're going to stop the Eagles.
Seeing some off the threes, I'm seeing some 2.5s populate out there. So Rams taking a little bit of money here before we get to that Sunday night tilt. Ravens and Chargers, you know, the battle of the Harbaughs. But when you look at the DC, you got Jesse Minter, the young guy coming in there from Michigan, against Todd Monken, who's done a pretty darn good job, obviously, with this Ravens offense. Fascinating, because I know we're going to talk about John and Jim. What about Todd against Jesse?
Well, I think it's going to be really a challenge for Jesse, because as good as they play, they're the best red zone defense in football. They've done a really good job of keeping you out of the – I think they're going to move the ball. I think this game's going to come down to what does Monken have planned in the red zone. I think Monken's going to move the football on him. I think we saw the second half where Cincinnati really started to take command of the game. We saw the Chiefs move the football. Look, I think the Chargers are a good team. They're better when they play against lesser quarterbacks. I think it's a really hard game, a really hard game for the Chargers.
I look at that Cowboy-Commander game, and we can understand why the Commanders are 10-point favorites. But then it's Cliff Kingsbury, year number one as the offensive coordinator with Jaden Daniels, of course, against Mike Zimmer back in Dallas, 2.0 version of Zim. Doesn't really have the horses here. What can Mike do to slow down Cliff's offense?
Well, I think to me this is really not about the coordinators. This is about a mismatch in talent.
Yep.
I really think that. I think to me this is what what Cliff's got to worry about is not letting Parsons screw the game up, right? Mm-hmm. He's got to go in there saying, we got to take care of Parsons. We take care of Parsons, we're going to move the ball, right? And I think that's where Zimmer's like, we got to slow him down. We got to force – Zimmer's going to take the same approach that Mike Tomlin took, the same approach that Vic Fangio. We got to keep this quarterback from running the football. We got to keep him from running the ball. That way of playing Jaden Daniels has been declared. It's 2 weeks now. And Cliff's had 10 days to get ready for it and how to attack it. I think that's going to be the biggest challenge in the game. But Mike is operating with less players, and that's always hard on any coordinator.
Yeah, it looks like 11 and 13 for that Cowboy defense. They're going to have to try to keep Jaden Daniels in a box and not let him run. Speaking of running, we've got the ponies here on First Bet from Del Mar all the way to Gulfstream Park, Kentucky Derby, Preakness. Got you covered, firstbet.com. That's firstbet.com, the number one, stbet.com. Use the promo code VEASAN200. You're going to claim a 20% rebate for your first 60 days, up to $200. So head over to firstbet.com and do so today. One other one, if I can sneak in just for Elliott Bowman's purposes, Gus Bradley against Ben Johnson in that Lions offense. What could Gus do to try to slow down Ben's runaway freight train offense?
Well, I mean, I think he's just got to take away that they've got to kind of force this into a one-dimensional game. You know, you can't let them just have both balance and run and pass. Yeah. I think that's one thing. But look, Gus is not – this is what I complain about Gus. He doesn't take away anything. He just runs his stuff. Gus is all about running his stuff. It's not about taking away what they do.
I think it'd be wise to try to take away one of those options if it's possible. Adam Burke's going to join the program next. Get his best bets. That's next year on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We are back on this Wednesday edition here of the Lombardi Line. Dave Ross and Michael Lombardi here with you, everybody. If you are a VSiN Pro subscriber, then you know all the fine work that our managing editor, Adam Burke, does here on the network. You can follow Adam, as I do, on X at Skating Tripods. Joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. And Adam, there's a couple games on here that caught my attention that you like this week. One of those is in Chicago. And we'll start there with the Vikings against the Bears. But maybe not a side that you like, but possibly a total. What do you think we're going to see between those two teams?
Hey, morning, guys. Good to be with you. Look, I mean, I think the first takeaway that I had regarding the Bears last week is that Caleb Williams looked good with Thomas Brown running the offense. And, you know, there's been so many knocks on Shane Waldron in the analytics community with just, you know, regular NFL observers, all the people that are out there just not really liking what they've seen out of this offense because they haven't really known how to use Caleb Williams in an effective way. And so Thomas Brown kind of gets him on the move a little bit. Caleb Williams has the 70 rush yards last week. They were eighth in EPA per play in that game against the Packers. And really that game was held under because of you know, the pace of the game, right? Green Bay only had, I think, 43 offensive plays in that game. So I think we get a little more tempo. We get a little more pace out of the Vikings and Bears. And I think the fact that, you know, Brown kind of got Williams moving a little bit is a really positive sign going up against Brian Flores and that super blitz heavy defense. Chicago's defense gave up 8.5 yards per play to Green Bay. Now, 60 of those came on the Christian Watson pass, so that skews the number a little bit. But I think the Bears' defense is gettable, and I think the Bears' offense is going to improve based on what we saw last week. So weather could be a tiny bit of a factor, could be a little bit windy, but I think over 39.5 is the play in that Vikings and Bears matchup.
Yeah, I do think both teams will move the football. Again, you know, you're right. Weather will play a factor. It's Soldier Field. Somebody might want to tell Ryan Poles that, who built the team, because he doesn't seem to really care about weather. He thinks he can throw it all over the lot. But I don't know if you can run the ball. Last week, they were able to run the ball with some success against them. Swift got going a little bit, I think. And obviously, Caleb was able to run the ball. I think he had 8 carries for 70 yards in the game. So that does going to make a difference. It is going to be the challenge. Because one thing I will say, though, Adam, what concerns me a little bit here is what happened last week was a declaration of how they want to run the offense. Really a three-step drop rhythm passing game, what we call spacing, right? It was really a spacing game with rhythm. And Flores knows this going in. And so I don't think Halfley really did a good job of adjusting to it. Whereas I think Flores is going to game plan to it, which I think is a big difference. How about Miami? I've been back and forth on this. I mean, New England shows some signs of life. I hate their offensive line. I don't think they're good. They're going to travel on the road. And I would never play an offensive line, a bad line on the road. But you like Miami here at home to feast on this Patriot team.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think from a narrative standpoint, you know, the Dolphins have a renewed sense of purpose right now. The AFC playoff bubble, I think, is pretty weak. You know, I know that Denver has had some good performances with Bo Nix kind of improving and all that. But I think that, you know, that last spot is kind of there for the taking. And Miami has a chance to get to 5-6. The remainder of their schedule, they got 2 games left with the Jets. They go to Cleveland, albeit in late December. So the weather could be terrible. But the Browns quit last week, let alone who knows what they look like in late December. I think with Tua back in the offense, you know, things are kind of back to where we expected them to be. Since his return in week 8, Dolphins are 3rd in EPA per play. They lead the NFL in drop back EPA. And New England doesn't really have a very good defense this season, despite the fact that Gerard Mayo is a defensive-minded guy, was a defensive coordinator, all of that. Maybe some things are kind of falling through the cracks now that he has to keep an eye on everything as opposed to just focusing on the defense. So I think Miami is very much capable of moving the football here. I think the Dolphins defense may be a little bit underrated because I think we still kind of think of them from last year's version, but they've improved this season. And also, I mean, they didn't have their quarterback. You know, offense benefits the defense in a lot of ways. So I think Miami's defense will continue to get a little bit stronger. And that offensive line for Drake May, I give him a ton of credit for the plays that he's making, but he's been sacked 17 times. He's barely over 200 passing yards per game in his 6 starts because there's not a whole lot of time to go downfield. Miami very much has the capability to create big explosive plays. So I like the Dolphins laying 7 here in a spot where I think they feel like they've still got a shot at being a playoff team. And I wouldn't disagree with them if that's their view.
Yeah, it seems like nobody's talking about that Tua contract anymore after he got hurt, and they really could do nothing without Tagovailoa behind center there. This Arizona and Seattle game, Adam, is perplexing to me because it's weird. I kind of liked it earlier in the week when Seattle was a small home dog, and I know it's just a point to flip the fave here to Arizona, but that always makes me a little bit nervy. What do you see in this one, and do you think Arizona can travel to the 12th man and get it done?
Yeah, I mean, obviously going outside could be a bit of a concern, and the weather doesn't look ideal for this game. I mean, it's Seattle. That's not really a big surprise. But look, I trust Jonathan Gannon and Drew Petzing. You know, coming off the bye, this is a team that has scored the first touchdown in 7 of their 10 games. They've scored on their first offensive possession in 6 of their 10 games. They're really good at the script, and they're coming off the bye. And I think that's a really important thing for them to go ahead and get out front and take the lead in this game. And look, guys, if they score first, then I can decide what I want to do, because you got Arizona basically pick them +1 in that range. If they score first, I'll get Seattle as a dog, can decide what I want to do from that point. If it sets up a live middle, if I can maybe get it high enough for that. So that's part of the thought process here for me. But the other thing is just, you know, the Cardinals over the last 5 weeks, 2nd in EPA per play on offense. They're doing a great job with Kyler Murray and the weapons that they have in this offense. They have the better defense in that span as well. And even though I still believe in San Francisco to a degree, I don't know if last week's win for Seattle was more about San Francisco or more about Seattle. The Seahawks were coming off the bye, still had less than 5 yards per play. They didn't look that explosive on offense, and they had a 2-minute drill drive that won them the game. So I'm not really sold on the Seahawks. I think the Cardinals are very much an improving team. I like them to go on the road and get the dub here.
Yeah, I do too. I think they're undervalued. I still think they're undervalued. Everybody doesn't. I worry about Kyler Murray playing in the rain and cold weather. He looked horrible against your Packers, Adam. So it really gives me some concern. I mean, they were like, and it was only 40 degrees, and they thought it was like sub 10 degrees. It was ridiculous. But we got the MAC this weekend. How good is that? We got the MAC on Tuesday, on Wednesday night. You got to love Ohio Toledo. You got to love the game. So you're going to go, you're not going with the Rockets. You're going to go with Ohio, huh?
Yeah, I'm going to take Ohio in this one. Had Miami of Ohio last night. That one came through. Also nice to see my alma mater, the Akron Zips, do what they were supposed to do against Kent Reed, Kent Spell, Kent State. Nice to see them get the wagon wheel in that one. But, you know, I like the Bobcats here. I mean, Toledo is a team that, you know, Jason Candle's done a phenomenal job with this program over the years, but Toledo came into this week 87th in yards per play. This has historically been a top 20, top 25 type of offense in yards per play. They're just not there this season. Tucker Gleason has been banged up, but they're not creating a whole lot of explosive plays. To me, it doesn't seem like they have the same athleticism that they've had in the past, especially relative to the other teams in this conference. Now, defensively, they're terrific. They've held the opposition under 5 yards per play on the season, one of 33 teams to do that. But Ohio's done that too. And Ohio, to me, has the better offense. Also, the Bobcats need to try to keep pace here in the MAC because there was a three-way tie at the top at 5-1 to get to the conference championship game. Well, Miami of Ohio won last night, so now they're chasing them down. So to me, I just think Ohio has a little bit more to play for in this game. I think that they have a little bit more balanced of an offense. Toledo cannot run the football at all. I think Ohio is just more trustworthy, has the higher ceiling, and the money's come in on Ohio in this game. They're down to a 1.5-point dog. They opened up at 3. I like the Bobcats in this one. I got them at +2.5, but I think anything at a dog price is worthwhile.
I want to sneak in one more Maxion game here, but Adam, as our managing editor here at the network, I wanted to ask you about that Black Friday special because right now everybody can get it through May 1st for only $60. There is a ton that you're going to have access through all the way through, obviously, the college football playoff, the Super Bowl, March Madness. So again, VSiN.com/subscribe. Adam, tell the people what they get with this Black Friday special.
Yeah, I mean, you get everything we have to offer over at VSiN.com. This is undoubtedly our best offer of the year. And like you said, you know, it's not like you're just getting the rest of the NFL season, the rest of the college football season. This is going to take you through conference tournaments, which we do a preview of every conference tournament for college basketball, through March Madness, MLB season preview guide as well. This is an all-access pass to access to our betting tools, the VSiN live stream, all the different bells and whistles that we have. And of course, you know, in that span, we continue to think about adding different perks and benefits to becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber. Not to mention, we just added those Circa betting splits not that long ago, and being a VSiN Pro subscriber gets you access to those. So $60 through May 1st, best deal that we run all year, and I highly recommend that everybody out there take advantage of it.
Sold. Let's get to one more Maxion play tonight. You're going to fade Toledo as the small home favorite. Are you going to fade Eastern Michigan as a small home favorite against Buffalo?
Yeah, this is another one where Buffalo's took a little bit of money in this game. Look, guys, Eastern Michigan's a horrible defensive team. They gave up 33 points to Kent State, 34 points to Central Michigan, and those are games that they won. And Buffalo's averaged 34 points per game in their 6 MAC games here so far. The Bulls, you know, look, Eastern Michigan's looking for bowl eligibility, but I don't think that matters when you're a 5-5 team. I think Buffalo's the way to look in that one up in Ypsilanti.
Adam, great stuff as always. Always appreciate the time. Thanks for hopping on the Progressive Guest Line with us.
Have a good one, guys.
There he is, everybody. Adam Burke, our managing editor here at the network. All right, Michael, when we come back, is there a mutiny in the Giants locker room? We'll discuss next here in the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Oh, Michael Lombardi, we've got a lot here to cram in on a very busy Wednesday edition of News or Noise.
Is it news?
Corleone is a man who insists on hearing bad news immediately.
Or just noise?
Are you going to act like this is news?
Just noise.
Let's separate the impactful from the insignificant with one simple question. News or noise?
Michael, the Sharks are circling in New York with the G-Men because we hear Dexter Lawrence, and that name will resonate certainly, when he publicly stated on Tuesday that Daniel Jones, quote, he's the QB1. To me, he's the best quarterback on the team. According to Jordan Schultz, we're hearing words that the guys in the locker room were disappointed at the quarterback change. Going to Tommy Cutlets here. Do we have a mutiny going on in that Giants locker room?
Well, I mean, for a player of the stature of Dexter Lawrence to say that and be publicly recorded as saying that, I mean, the Jordan Schultz piece of this news is really it's from his sources, but they're not named. This is a named source, which gives it a lot more credibility and a lot more flair to it. And I think this is news, right? I think the Giants are a poorly run organization. There's no denying it, right? I mean, they signed Drew Lock to $5 million. Now they go to Tommy DeVito. What has Tommy DeVito done? I mean, this is going back to when, you know, remember Ben McAdoo when he benched Eli Manning and he upset everybody and lost his job? I mean, I don't know what's going on here, but I don't know what they see that Tommy DeVito is their best player on their team. You know, I mean, are they trying to get the first pick overall in the draft? I can't believe they are. But this is embarrassing. Look, you know, he could have a good series or something like that. But I was talking to, you know, I mean, look, I think the one thing that Todd Bowles wants, he doesn't want to make sure that we know Drew Lock's the backup. But, you know, Daniel Jones won't even dress for the game. Oof. I mean, to me, look, this is, you went all the way in on Daniel Jones now, and you said all we need to do is protect him this offseason. Now you're saying he's not good enough to even be the starter. Interesting times.
It is, and it is news, and I'm with you. I respect the fact, because we always say in the media, put your name on it. Dexter Lawrence put his name on it and put it out there, as you mentioned, Michael, not some unnamed source. Let's hear from Primetime in Colorado about his future in Boulder or elsewhere and determine if this is news or noise.
I'm happy where I am, man. I'm good. I got a kickstand down. You know what a kickstand is? A lot of people don't in there and done out of age. You don't know what a kickstand is. That means I'm resting. I'm good. I'm happy. I'm excited. I'm enthusiastic about where I am. I love it here. I truly do.
I mean, that is absolutely fascinating, Michael, to me. The jacket, first and foremost, that's like 80s style. Yeah. What do you make of Primetime? Is that news or noise?
No, I think it's news. I mean, look, I think Deion has been on record as saying, I'm not going somewhere to coach guys that make more than me.
Mm.
I think Deion wants to coach. He wants to impact kids. I think he wants to be, you know, he doesn't want to have to placate and not ruffle feathers. I think he wants to ruffle feathers. I think to me, that's part of it. It's part of coaching. I mean, he comes from whether we call it old school or the right school. I don't know how you want to call it. But he comes from a place where you have to be demanding of players. We have now entered an era where you're not allowed to talk to play. You're not allowed to be demanding. You know, everything's going to be okay. We're going to go to Dairy Queen. So I think, to me, he doesn't want to do that. I believe him completely. I think this whole Michael Irvin notion that he's going to – no, Michael Irvin to call offensive plays? Oh, my God, please stop.
Stop. Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about because, you know, Michael is a very big personality. He does have Jerry Jones's ear. If Michael's pitching Deion – to Dallas, but Deion's like, no, Mike, I'm good right where I am. Like, is that really happening
right,
here?
Because Michael just doesn't know. I mean, look, there's a huge gap. And I think a lot of players would tell you this, between what a coach does and what a player understands. And that's a huge gap. I mean, look, Zach Gore's only coached 3 years in the league, and he's struggling like hell to be a defense coordinator. Mm. Michael Irvin's not even coached. You got to have to get on the grassroots level. It's not about just calling plays. It's not about, I want to run this. That's Madden. It's about how do you design? How do you lead? How do you lead people? Because this is still leadership. And I think Deion's leading men, and I think he likes it there. I don't think he wants to lead people that make more money than he does. I think that's the big concern. I mean, I think, look, and I look, one of his closest friends is Nick Saban, right?
Yeah.
And Nick Saban left the college.
And we'll get back to Michael here in a second, because that does lead us, when you're talking about the Cowboys in particular, you know, Michael might be lobbying Jerry for a job that's currently occupied by Mike McCarthy. So Jerry spoke about Big Mike in Dallas and whether or not he's lost the locker room. Take a listen.
I can tell you in there right now with kind of careers a bunch of those guys have, kind of the prospects of their futures, the competitors they are. I don't worry one ounce about losing anything as far as in the family of losing a team. Now, can they be a part of a team that doesn't execute, doesn't win, and that'd be disappointing them and our fans and everybody else? Yes, yes, that can happen. But that doesn't mean that they don't go out, execute, be ready to go.
Edward's face says a lot there, Michael. What do you make of Jerry here? Because I know he's trying to play coy. Hey, you know, Mike's still our guy. He hasn't lost the locker room. Is that news or noise?
No, I think it's news. I mean, what Jerry's saying is, look, I don't want to change right now. Stop asking me. You know, nothing Jerry says is really, you can't believe it. He's such a great salesman. I don't think he's being maliciously lying. But I think he doesn't want to make a change. So stop asking me the question. So I'm going to deny everything you asked me. I'm going to say he doesn't lost the locker room. I'm going to say he's doing fine. Mike, I mean, if Jerry wanted to make a change, he should have made it last year after the Packer game. He didn't. You know, he didn't. And I think that's cost him this year, as I wrote about on VSiN Online. I think, you know, to me, you know, the words too late are often the best words to describe when you get down a deep hole. The Jets, too late to recognize Joe Douglas wasn't doing what he needed to do. Too late to recognize Saleh. You know, I think the next team that we really need to talk about is too late is the Cincinnati Bengals.
Oh,
Zach Taylor's inability to win close games, Zach Taylor's inability to control, Zach Taylor's inability to get the defense to play at a high level because of the way he coaches. I think this is Cincinnati sitting on a Super Bowl team. If they had Mike Vrabel coaching that team, what do you think that record would be?
Well, it'd be very, very different. And again, I skipped over Kevin Stefanski. You can make the same case. In Cleveland, he was coach of the year last year. I don't think he should be in trouble there, Michael. But again, he says that he's not worried about.
Well, somebody has to get blamed. Somebody has to get blamed in Cleveland, and it's not going to be Jimmy Haslam or Andrew Berry, even though they picked the quarterback. I mean, so, and they're the ones who demanded that he change coaches. Look, I'm told in Cleveland they have so many people involved in meetings that they can't even. They have to go to like an auditorium to have a meeting. That's how many people are involved. And when you have that many people involved, you're never going to make a good decision.
Yep.
You're just not. And the owner wants a lot of people involved. He likes to listen to a lot of people. That's always been. I worked for the man. He doesn't trust one opinion. He has to have 50,000 opinions. He should have been a pollster.
I mean, that's so well said. I would just say if they do move on from Stefanski, I don't think he'd be out of work very long if he's still looking for work. Michael, let's get to our best bets. They're brought to us by GBank. It is the official bank of VSiN, and it was great having Adam Burke and Will Hill on. A couple of plays I wanted to get to that I found interesting. One from each one of those guys. It was the Vikings and the Bears game. And Will is going to lay the small number on the road here with the Vikings, and Adam's going to play the over in that contest. 3.5, you might be able to find some threes out there for the Vikings. If you really look, and that total is down to 39, weather could be an issue here. You know, I'm looking at the Vikings, Michael. Maybe it's not the prettiest covers, you know, Jacksonville, depending on where you got the number. If you got it early, you got the cover. If you got it late, you didn't get the cover. And then last week, they do get the win on the road in Tennessee. So they're kind of, it's still the NFL, and you're still going on the road 3 weeks in a row. What do you make of the Vikings trying to make it, you know, WWW three in a row on the road? That's pretty impressive if they can get this done.
It really is. And look, the Bears, I think, the Bears got shredded last week. I mean, the Packers, if you just look at the numbers, the Packers have moved the ball on the Bears. They know how to attack this Bear defense. And again, I'm going to say it. The Bears defense is built on their front. And when their front can't dominate, which they couldn't do in the Packer game because the Packers pass protect so well, the coverage just got exposed. It just did. And I think, to me, that's the problem with the Bears. The problem with the Bears are real simple. They don't have good enough quality in the offensive and defensive lines. They can win some games when they play against lesser competition that can't dominate their offense. I think this Minnesota defense is better than what Green Bay. Now, they can't cover. They really cannot cover. It's really bad. So I think that's going to be the issue in the game. Can they handle that? I think, to me, the 3.5 seems very tempting to lay on the road against Chicago, because I think Brian Flores will do a good job against Caleb Williams.
The GBank Visa Signature Card is your best bet. It delivers 1% cashback rewards on eligible gaming transactions, 2% cashback rewards on all eligible purchases. So for more info, head over to VSIN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. Subject to credit approval, terms and conditions do apply. Michael, great conversation as always. Tomorrow we begin week 12, my friend.
There we go. Thank you, David.
Absolutely. See you tomorrow right back here on the Lombardi Line. A numbers game is up next.